The Border Patrol is presented by locally owned and operated Walker Medical Linen Services. For linens, toweling, scrubs, lab coats, and patient gowns for your medical facility, visit walkermls.com.
You ready, dude?
I'm ready, Slick. Are you?
Oh, yeah. Take it down.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's check in with our very good friend Kevin Ioli from Yahoo Sports. Busy weekend for anyone that loves the fights or covers the fights. Kevin, I wish they wouldn't do this, but beggars can't be choosers, and I'm never going to complain about too many fights, but my attention was somewhat divided. But, you know, I was locked in on the Canelo fight. But UFC 274 and Canelo Alvarez and Dimitri Bivol. And so we have Kevin Ioli to talk about that. Kevin, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. Yeah, I was hopping last week. There's no doubt about that.
And so let's get into before we talk about Canelo, let's talk about UFC 274. I mean, there were a couple of fights that were not entertaining, including the Rose Namajunas fight, the Shogun fight. Those were tough to watch to the point where I really didn't watch too much of them. But everyone's watching the highlight. Michael Chandler and that kick and that knockout of Tony Ferguson. Wow. And that still shot that's making its rounds on social media. Wow. What was your reaction to that?
Greatest knockout in UFC history. I can't ever remember seeing a better knockout than that. It was just phenomenal. And, you know, I put a ranking of the fights, just, you know, one line each, you know, of 1 through 14 of UFC. And it was kind of funny because I think 12 of the 14 fights were really, really good. And you had two awful ones, and they happened to both be on the main cards. You know, Shogun and Rose Namajunas. Those two fights were awful. But when you look at it overall, I thought they delivered a really good card. I mean, there were some great fights on the preliminaries. You mentioned the Chandler fight. The main event was really something else. And that Randy Brown Chaos Williams fight was very good. So it was really a good show for UFC on Saturday.
And so Charles Oliveira gets the win over Justin Gaethje in the main event. What did you think of that performance?
You know, I mean, I think it solidified Oliveira to me as not only the best pound for pound lightweight in the world, but he's close to number one overall. Period. I mean, you know, look at the run he has been on. Just in the last three fights alone, you know, he knocks out Mike Chandler in the second round. He submits Dustin Poirier in the third round, and then he submits Justin Gaethje in the first round. I mean, and you're talking about the elite of the elite of the elite with those guys, and he's just handling them like it's nothing. I mean, you know, he's an exciting fighter. There's some people when they hear a guy's a jiu-jitsu fighter, they go, oh, but this guy's a striker. He does everything. Just really one of the most fun fighters in the world to watch right now.
It was interesting though, Kevin. I'm learning the MMA world as I'm trying to grow as a broadcaster, and I'm actually doing the play-by-play or the commentary of the Invicta fights here in Kansas City coming up on Wednesday. It's going to be my second time doing it, and we've had a few, just in a short time I've been doing it, catch weight fights where one of the fighters doesn't make weight. And one of the fights that I was getting ready to call last time around, there was a dispute between two of the fighters. One of the fighters didn't make weight, and the other fighter refused to take the fight. And that was a big those two sides were going back and forth on social media and all this. And this Oliveira situation, I'm learning about it. It seems like this is pretty unique in the UFC world. What did you think of that whole story and the way that Dana White's handling it?
Well, you know, I thought they handled it perfectly, right? I mean, this is the fifth time, I believe, or fifth or sixth time that Oliveira has missed weight in his UFC career. Now, he hadn't done it for a while, and that coincidentally had led to his long winning streak he was on. But, you know, I think what ended up happening, what a lot of people are trying to say is, hey, they went downstairs and they stepped on a scale that the UFC provides, because they're not allowed to touch the scale that the commission uses to weigh the fighters. So they had another scale. And Dana White made the point that, you know, it's getting changed from kilos to pounds and back and forth, and guys are picking it up and messing with it, and that perhaps there was something there. But the thing is, all the people that are focusing on the weight are missing two things. You know, they're saying that Oliveira got screwed, and they're saying that the scale was tampered with. Well, number one, all the other championship fighters made weight on the dot, right? Justin Gaethje was 155, and he planned to weigh 155. Rose Namajunas and Carlos Esparza were 115. That's what they planned to weigh. And then the other thing, and I wrote this in my post-fight column, if Charles had actually been on weight the night before, why did he wait till last to come in and weigh in? There's no reason to do that, because if you're on weight and you get up in the morning, you haven't eaten, you haven't drank, you go weigh in early, and then you can go eat and start your rehydration process. But he was last with minutes to spare. I think he came in with like 5 minutes left to go in the weigh-in period. So that tells you that he was struggling to lose weight. So I think, you know, he wasn't necessarily telling the truth about everything that happened. And, you know, but the bottom line is the scale that they weighed in on was calibrated. Everybody, I think there was one woman that missed weight too, Carnelosi, but most of the fighters all made weight. There was 28 fighters, because there was one fight that was canceled. So it was just an incredible amount of fighters that made weight. I just think it was an excuse on Oliveira's part.
All right, before we move on to the Canelo fight, what's next for Oliveira, and what's next for Michael Chandler? Because, look, he was coming off back-to-back losses against great competition. But my goodness, he is one of, if not the most exciting fighters to watch right now. You know something wild is going to happen. So what's next for those two after those wins?
Yeah, I mean, I think Chandler is going to have some big fight. There's no doubt he's going to fight a top guy. You know, Oliveira is going to have a large say in who he wants to fight. And, you know, he had been saying before the fight he wanted to fight Conor McGregor. McGregor really does not deserve a title. Right, and they, you know, but they may give it to him if that's who Oliveira wants to fight. But also, Dustin Poirier's right there, and then the one that I think makes the most sense, and I think will end up probably happening, would be Islam Makhachev. And then I think that's the guy that, you know, they're both on long. Makhachev has a 10-fight winning streak. Charles has an 11-fight winning streak. Makhachev is number three in the rankings, and, you know, probably move up to number two. So I think that's the fight that'll happen. But I would never rule out Conor McGregor.
We have Kevin Ioli from Yahoo Sports, our guest. All right, Kevin, we were exchanging some text messages yesterday, and we were talking about the Canelo fight, obviously. And look, I watched it with my family at the movie theater. It's a different atmosphere, and, you know, if you can't be at the fight, I want, you know, obviously on the big screen and the good sound and everything else. And so I kept looking at my son. He watches all the fights with me, and we kept saying, wow, wow. And it wasn't. And it was because Dmitry Bivol and how awesome he was and what a great game plan he had and how disciplined he was. You remember there was like a 10-punch combination that he threw. He landed a few of them up against the ropes, and Canelo shook his head like he did against Triple G and waved him in, come on, more, more. Because at that point, Canelo knew, okay, I'm not going to outbox him. I got to hope I can land something big and win by stoppage or do something to change the fight. And Bivol stood his ground and said, nope, you ain't baiting me. Such a disciplined fight, tremendous defense. He was more active than he's been in the past. He's known for a great jab and very good defense. But he took the fight to Canelo. And I know that you didn't think that the size was the big difference. I just thought, you know, the only way that size came into play was Canelo wasn't hurting him. He wasn't getting hurt. He was able to absorb a lot of those punches, unlike other fighters. But, man, Canelo dared to be great. He tried to do something awesome and unify light heavyweight. But this was more about how awesome and what a tremendous game plan and execution of the game plan from an elite fighter in Dmitry Bivol, right?
No doubt. I mean, he fought the fight of his life. You know, if you watched any of his previous fights, and I've watched most of his fights in his career, You know, this is a guy that doesn't normally throw a lot of punches. And against Canelo, you know, I mean, what did he double him in output? I mean, it was an incredible amount of punches that he threw. And, you know, Canelo just really had trouble getting his offense on track because, you know, he's getting whacked all these shots, boom, 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 you know, and it's really hard, you know, to get your offense going when you have so much coming back at you, you know. And even though Canelo is a counter puncher and that tends to create openings, you know, Bivol was an accurate puncher too. That's the other thing. He wasn't just, you know, throwing wild, crazy punches. You know, he was picking targets and he was hitting them. And I thought he fought a fantastic fight, you know, and I thought Canelo fought, you know, hard and tried to do what he, you know, had to do. But the thing Canelo had, he doesn't have that one punch power. He's a hard puncher and he generally breaks you down, right? He hits you and you finally, especially that body attack, you know, he hits you and finally you just, you know, kind of wilt. And he wasn't able to land as many of those kind of shots. Bivol was blocking a lot of them. And he made Canelo defend a lot of them, you know, and given those two things, you know, Canelo was never able to kind of slow Bivol down and get on that downhill run where now he can impose his will.
So I saw this statistic about Canelo, and Steven brings this up all the time, Kevin, about the fact that he wants to be great. He challenges himself. He takes fights. And the fact that since December 2020, Canelo's had five fights, and you look at all these other fighters, Usyk, Crawford, Spence, you know, they combined for seven fights over that same period of time. Does Canelo fight too much, or do those guys not fight enough?
Well, they don't fight enough. I mean, look, you know, Canelo, you get better when you fight, right? And, you know, how many people would have beaten Canelo on Saturday night, right? You know, I think we know now that Alexander Usyk would have beaten him, right? You know, he talked about moving up to heavyweight. But I love what Canelo's doing. You know, I mean, he went out there with a goal. So he started on December of 20. Hey, I want to try to unify the 168-pound titles. He went out there, and in one calendar year, he did that. Now, you know, he made the idea, hey, let's try to go and get the 175-pound title. And, you know, hey, you look where he started from. This is a guy that weighed 139 in his first pro fight. You know, that's a long way up. And, you know, God bless him for, you know, having the courage to try that. And I'm never going to criticize a guy. And I think, you know, you look at it, he fought on a schedule that he's fought his entire career. That's why he has as many fights as he did. So I don't think it really made an impact on him. I just think that he fought a guy on Saturday who was better. And this guy, you know, had a, as Steven said, had a perfect game plan. He executed it perfectly. And, you know, Canelo fought hard. He was, you know, he just was outmanned on this particular day.
And I do think he got, you know, frustrated. And why wouldn't you? And he started, you know, headhunting and threw some big shots that would hurt most guys, but man, Bivol just walked right through him. But he did mention, boy, and you see the welts and everything on his arm, kind of like with the Callum Smith fight. Canelo hurt Bivol's arm, and I wish he would have gone to the body a little bit more. But either way, Canelo wasn't going to win that fight the way Bivol fought. And all the credit to the light heavyweight champion of the world. And so in the ring, and we both know that fighters will say things out of emotion in the ring and post-fight interviews, but that's not always, you know, what happens. And so he said he wanted to take advantage of the rematch clause and have a rematch for his next fight. So that means no Triple G trilogy fight. And I'll never put anything past Canelo, right? I mean, we've seen great fighters up against it, they go in and we don't think they have a chance of winning, and they pull off, you know, an upset. Could Canelo beat him on the right night? Oh, sure, why not? But boy, I don't know if that's the right fight for him. But who can tell him no? What do you think he should do, and what do you think he will do next?
I think the Triple G fight just makes too much sense, right? I mean, you know, they're rivals. They had two fights that were, you know, amazing fights. Both of them were, both of them were close, you know. If I remember correctly, I scored the first one for Triple G, and I had the second one a draw. You know, and it turned out that the first one was a draw and the second one Canelo won. And so I, to me, that's the fight to make, right? And you fight at 68, you know, that just makes a lot of sense to me. Canelo is a prideful guy, and I think he's going to watch that fight. And I wrote in my column after the fight, I said, I think Canelo would lose to Bivol 10 out of 10 times when I see the way they fought in that style. Bivol fights the way he fought on Saturday. There's nothing I think Canelo's going to do to change that narrative. Bivol's just going to outbox him and win those fights. I think, a fight against Triple G is going to be a fight that the public is into. It's going to be a lucrative fight. It's going to be a competitive fight. And I think it also then, you know, it gives Canelo, you know, gets him back in there. You know, he's going to fight somebody his own size, and you can judge him fairly. I don't think size was a factor in the fight. Yes, he didn't hurt him, but I think he didn't hurt him because, as I said earlier, Canelo isn't a guy that's going to hit you with shots to the head and one punch knock you out. He's going to wear you down, hit you to the body, and eventually, you know, stop you that way. And he wasn't able to get those shots in because Bivol was just so good defensively. So I don't, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. Canelo's a competitor, but if he watches that fight film and feels like, you know, he can win, I think that's the fight he's going to do. If he feels like he can't, then I think he'll go ahead and take Triple G.
And look, and I don't love Canelo at light heavyweight. I mean, I watch whatever he does, but I wish he'd go back to 168 because there's some big fights there. Triple G, David Benavidez, you know, eventually, you know, Charlo, like those, there's some good fights to be made. But like, I liked your column writing about, you know, what Canelo's done, and I wish, like Nate pointed out, that tweet, more of the pound for pound guys would follow suit, because that's what UFC has done. The best fight the best, you know, that's what you want to see. And Canelo, whether you like him, whatever, he fights a lot and takes on all comers and gives us something to talk about and stays in the ring. Errol Spence, Bud Crawford, like Bud Crawford tweeted out, I guess we know who's number one pound for pound now. Well, good. Now fight somebody. Fight Errol Spence.
Right.
Go fight each other. Let's go. Let's see this. Don't fight once a year, man. Fight two or three times a year. If these fighters want, because it seems like there's a lot of haters of Canelo. Well, guess what? He has a lot of fans because he fights a lot and gives us a lot of events to celebrate and go watch. If you want to be in that, you know, to be talked about like that, go fight. Fight
100%.
Each other. Right? Am I wrong here?
No, I mean, I've written that a million times. I think, you know, I've talked with you about that on your show a lot. And, you know, Stephen, I mean, I just think that that's the failing of boxing. Like, what's happened with, you know, and I think this was a Mayweather creation, you know, people worry about the pay-per-view numbers, and they talk about, they act like they want to get to pay-per-view as if it is a, you know, a destination to be celebrated, and pay-per-view is not a destination to be celebrated. I mean, that it's, you know, it's actually less easy for your fans to see you fight, right? But, you know, now, like when after Spence fought Porter, I remember being at the press conference, and I thought, okay, now he's going to say he wants Crawford and Bingo were there. And he goes, oh, I have higher pay-per-views, and what's he done? You know, and like, no, are you a better fighter than him, or is he a better fighter than you? That's what you should be talking about. And, you know, I can kick his butt and blah, blah, blah. And so the whole society got it wrong in boxing about how they look at these fights. And I even see fans on Twitter, you know, they talk about how much guys made and what they, you know, like, what does that matter? We want to, you know, Sugar Ray Robinson once fought Jake LaMotta twice in 3 weeks. And that, you know, I'm not saying we should get back to that, right? You know, that's a little rough. But, I mean, I think we should get to that era where I will fight anybody at any time. And if boxing is such a great sport when it is done right, and when I say done right, I mean putting the right fights together, match make well. And I thought this was a good matchmaking fight the other day because, hey, it surprised us. We didn't know how it was going to come out. That's what boxing needs to do, and that Canelo put a great example out there. And just the fact that he said he would fight Usyk, and he was serious. Now, we realize now he could never do that, but that attitude permeates a lot, and you want to see that. And to me, I think I will never criticize Canelo for trying to be great, and I will commend him for the efforts and, you know, for giving us so many fun fights.
Nate Bucati, final comments.
Well, I just wonder if the world of MMA is that going to at some point cause these fighters to want to do that more? Because that is one thing you can say for MMA, right? Like, if there's a fight people want to see, it's going to happen. And I realize there's right. issues on the other end, because then the fighters don't have maybe as much control. They don't get compensated as well and all that. But that's one of the things about the popularity of that sport. Do you think that that will carry over and create more of what you want to see there, Kevin, at some point?
I think we're in the midst of seeing that. Like, if you started last month and, you know, the fights that we had last month and, you know, the Fury fight, and we're in this great run. You know, this week we've got Charlo versus Castano for the undisputed title. There have been a lot of really good fights week after week after week. You know, we've been seeing, you know, Shakur Stevenson a couple of weeks ago. That was a tremendous fight. That's the kind of fight, you know, you want that unification fight, the guys that people believe are the two best in the division fighting. We're starting to get that. And I think boxing is realizing it. The thing, you know, what UFC does is they run a business. And so they're not going to pay somebody $40 million if they're not generating that kind of revenue. But they pay their guys well. If you look at what the fighters actually make, and they have a middle class of fighters that makes, you know, on the low side between, you know, and I'm not saying per fight, per year, $300,000, and on the high side, you know, a couple million dollars. And that's a middle class where they fight three or four times a year and they make that kind of money. And they have a lot of those fighters that make that. And so there's a lot of people in MMA that are thriving and making money and being successful and doing well. And in boxing, you have a couple really, 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 really high-paid fighters that are successful. And then everybody else is, like, you know, scratching and clawing. And I think if you start putting the best fights together and the fights that people want to see, it'll start to change, because there's nothing like a great fight. Everybody's into it, right? And you see the buzz at these fights. Even people who aren't fight fans, when the fighters are coming down and when there's a big flurry, they all go crazy. And I think it's a sign, and it should be a sign, if you make the right fights, the people will show up.
Kevin Ioli, you can follow him on Twitter, at Kevin I. My guy last week had 7 columns on Canelo Bivol. Had 10 on UFC 274, videos with Dana White, Justin Gaethje, Mike Chandler, all of it. Best in the business at covering combat sports. That's why we have him on the show. Kevin I on Twitter is his handle. Hey, Kevin, thanks for the time, and I'm sure we'll talk to you again real soon.
Appreciate you guys. See you soon.
That's Kevin Ioli. We will take a break. We'll be joined by Adam Teicher. When we come back, Tim Grenhard's going to be here. He's going to drink coffee, and he's going to put Adam Teicher's feet to the fire. It's about time. Back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the show. This is the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let me tell you this. All hell's breaking loose out here. Mark Collins is walking by. I just saw B-Mac. We've got Tim Grenhard sitting down with
Tom
us.
Tom Bergmeyer.
Nate Bucati. I reminded him that was one of the best moments of the Joe McGuff ALS Golf Classic. I've seen Frank Ball. I don't need to mention him. And so I said, hey, Bergie, I liked when George looked out of the crowd and said, Bergie, can any of these guys hit today? Nope. No, they can't, George. That's right. And so that was, he was laughing.
He was a straight man, right?
Yeah. You like that, Nate. I said,
are there
I
any
told,
pictures here? Did Bergie, Bergie put his hand right. up. Can these kids hit today? Nope.
Nope. I told Bergie that you and I thoroughly enjoyed that. Now we have Frank Bull talking real loud. He doesn't care if we're broadcasting. But we've got great things going on right now at the Third Long Foundation Celebrity Golf Classic. Derek Thomas, Neil Smith, Third Long Foundation. We've got Tim Grunhardt here with a cup of coffee, so you know he's wired. We have Adam Teicher from ESPN on the show. Adam, sorry, we should have prepped you. Tim Grunhardt, boy, that's a handful for you to take care of. What do you have to say about Tim Grunhardt, Adam?
I'm just happy to see him getting into the Chiefs Hall of Fame, you know, last year, because that was quite an honor. So it's good to see some guys from that era start getting in now, too.
Yeah, Adam, thanks a lot. And you were there every day, you and Whitlock and a bunch of other guys. And I'll tell you what, we had a great group that followed us and held us to account. And Adam used to hold me to account quite a bit. But I love that about him. I really did.
How does it feel to be?
I think it's fair to say that Tim, you and I get along better now that you retired than we did when you played. Is that a fair thing to say?
Hey,
I know. And listen, I apologize, Adam, for being an ass. Okay.
Okay. Wow.
Now that I've been in media
for,
now for
yep.
See, this show is
isn't this therapeutic?
Guys, that's what I was going for.
Hey, if you guys got along perfectly, that means Adam wouldn't have been doing his job properly at the time. But, Adam, how does it feel to be associated with Jason Whitlock? That's like the one other person that he named when he was like, yeah, you and Whitlock.
Yeah, that's quite the company to keep there. But, you know, I just got a copy, an advanced copy of your book, and I have not had a chance to read it yet, but looking forward to it. When's that come out, by the way?
It's going to come out in right when the football season kind of starts, the end of August, and we had some pre-orders. If you want a pre-order, thanks for bringing that up, Adam, at timgrunhardt.com. And it's a book about the 90s. It's the Kansas City Chiefs and the building of the foundation of the Chiefs in the 90s. A lot of great stories about the guys and the games and a little bit about this fat guy from the south side of Chicago barely creeping by trying to make a living in the NFL.
Oh, look forward to that. Well, Tim Grunhardt, one-man promotion machine right here. That's fantastic.
Who's your favorite head coach of all time, John Holmes?
John Holmes is here. Jamie Bluen just walked in. It's a who's who.
Hey, John Holmes.
Staley Farms. Okay, Adam.
Bluma. Yep.
Adam, Timmy just said he used to.
I'm going to let you guys run here for a little bit.
Okay, that's fine.
Come back for me.
Used to keep him in check, so now you have to do that with Nate and I because we have this full draft class of draft picks, and then we end up talking about Justin Ross for like 20 minutes earlier this morning. And now I'm just trying to say if he ends up making the team, that's a huge accomplishment. I'm trying to temper everyone's expectations, but in reality, I'm trying to temper my own. And so let's just start there, and then we'll get to the draft class. What did you see from him? It's just minicamp, but still, just the fact that he's out there, that's a big story by itself, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I feel like he's already won. You know, he's at least made it onto the practice field for an NFL team. And, you know, it's hard to see a big role for him this year, given what the Chiefs did in free agency and bringing Mecole Hardman back and then drafting Sky Moore. But every year, you know, the Chiefs have a guy, at least one guy and sometimes more, or two or three, that they kind of redshirt, you know, that are on the roster. They don't play. They don't even dress for games. They're inactive each week. But they, you know, they end up contributing, you know, down the road. You know, they're just kind of there, just be protected on the roster. The Chiefs don't want to expose them to waivers and risk losing him. So you know, that may be the role that Justin Ross ends up with. He may end up with more than that. It's way too early to say, but I could see him being kind of a guy the Chiefs just sort of carry at the bottom of their 53-man roster. Maybe doesn't play much, if at all, but, you know, and then they try to see what they can get out of him down the road.
I was telling Steven this, Adam, if it wasn't for watching Trey Smith last year get drafted in the sixth round and see all this hype about him, about how he had, you know, early round talent and what a steal the Chiefs got, but it was the medicals that scared everybody away. At the time, I was skeptical of all that because I just thought to myself, when you look at all of the players that you've never heard of before that are getting drafted in the sixth and seventh round, nobody wanted to take a chance on this Trey Smith, even though he's got that kind of upside. And then he went out and he lived up to every bit of that hype last year. And I guess I feel the way that same way about Ross. It's like, man, you look at some of the guys that are getting drafted in the seventh round that nobody's ever heard of from schools you've never heard of. Nobody was willing to take a shot on a guy that had this kind of talent, but it happened last year. So I don't know. Like, where do you come down on the fact that he was available and the fact that the Chiefs, you know, had such success in a similar situation last year?
Yeah, well, I think one of the reasons he wasn't drafted was that I'm sure there's a lot of teams who didn't even have him on the draft board. They just had him as an undraftable player because of his medical condition. So, you know, that reduces the competition right there. And you know, at some point somebody's going to take a shot at him for sure. But the Chiefs weren't in that boat. You know, they seem to think that he's going to be okay and that they'll manage that. You know, one thing I'd be careful of doing is saying, well, it worked for Trey Smith, so it can work for Justin Ross. I mean, they have two completely different conditions here. So that's not really comparing apples to apples for sure. So, but we'll see. I mean, you know, as long as Justin Ross is willing to do this, and obviously he is, he wants to play in the NFL. He wants to give it a shot. I hope it works out for him. You know, I think this is really a great story.
Adam Teicher from ESPN is our guest. One note that we had known about going in was Sky Moore with a hamstring, and Brian Cook with a shoulder. And anything to be concerned about as we progress through the off season with those two injuries?
Doesn't seem to be. You know, the Chiefs are cautious with just about everybody this time of year, and there's no sense in pushing it, even for rookies who are just trying to get their feet wet. You know, those guys can be around and are going to meetings and stuff, and they're out at practice, not doing much, though. So, you know, let's see what happens here. I don't think there's going to be long-term injuries on either guy's part, though.
Adam, Tim Grunhardt again. I know you're out there at the rookie minicamp, and you know, obviously, probably a little bit of nerves of those young men, even though they've played a lot of football over the years. Who flashed? Who looked good? Who were you thinking, wow, that guy was more impressive in either size or speed or athleticism than you thought they were going to be?
Yeah, as you know, Tim, rookie camp is not a great exhibition of football. You know, you're bringing a bunch of guys together who've never played together or learning a playbook all together. So there's a lot of stuff you see happening out there. You're like, what was that? I mean, it looks like these guys have never practiced before together. Well, they haven't. So that's why it looks that way. So it's kind of sloppy stuff. So you don't make a lot out of that. But, you know, Trent McDuffie kind of, you know, you watch Trent McDuffie and you can see what the Chiefs were thinking with him. I mean, he just seems to know how to play the game, you know. You watch, he was a guy who seemed to know what he was doing out there. You know, he was always in the right place or seemed to be. So, you know, I think the learning curve for McDuffie seems like it's going to be very small, and that he should be able to play right away. I'd be surprised when the Chiefs start OTAs in a few weeks whether he's not out there with the ones, you know, that with the starters. So you know, they're moving him around inside and out. So you know, McDuffie is a guy who's caught my eye. You know, Leo Chenal, the linebacker, you know, we all know that the knock on him is he couldn't cover. He made a nice play in the passing game yesterday. You know, it knocked the ball out of the hands of a tight end who, you know, was in his area. So, you know, maybe he's off to a little bit of a good start there, too. So, you know, those are the guys that have really he caught my eye. You know, Karlaftis, he looks the part for sure. You know, Chiefs moving him around a little bit, too. You know, with those guys, it's more difficult to tell just until the pads come on. But, you know, Karlaftis certainly looks the part as well. So I'd say those are particularly with Sky Moore not being out there and Brian Cook not being out there, those are the guys among the drafted players that really caught my eye just through the first couple days.
Yeah, Adam, one of the things that the big knock on McDuffie was his short arms and he didn't have the kind of length. But when you watch him, and, you know, I haven't watched a ton of it, but I put his film on, he seems to be better technically than a lot of guys that you see come up because he had to be. You know, I mean, he had to be able to have good fundamentals of technique because, you know, he couldn't rely on his length and grabbing and getting, you know, beat and then, you know, catching up with the length. Did you see any of that with his hips and his flexibility and kind of the way that he got up in guys' grills? Is he look like a guy that technically is ready to play at this level?
Yeah, I'd say that's a fair assessment. You know, he looks like he, you know, has that part of it figured out. Yeah, and, you know, he does have to learn to play a little bigger than maybe what he is. So, you know, that's something to keep an eye on. But I did think that he was he was ready for that part of the game for sure.
Nate, final question before we let Adam Tasha go.
Well, you talked about how McDuffie's, you know, got a learning curve defensively. He's also got a learning curve when it comes to pronunciation guide, Marco.
Oh, no.
Spagnolia. And
what do you think of that?
Spagnolia, yeah, he did it again. He did it on draft night, and he did it again on Saturday. So somebody's going to have to tell him what Spagnola's real name is, right? I guess maybe I'll be the guy to break the news to him at some point when I talk to him.
Just go Spags.
Ravioli, Spagnoli.
And that's okay, though. Like I said, I was able to give Susan a dozen Spagnolias for Mother's Day yesterday. She was very happy. There it is. Adam, thank you so much for the time, sir. We appreciate it.
All right, good stuff, guys. We'll talk to you next time.
Thank you, sir.
Adam Tasha from ESPN. We got Tim Grunhardt here.
See, Grunny thought it was a pasta, too. You know, it's, you know, well, not just me.
Spagnoli.
Yeah. Timmy can say that stuff.
Yeah, he's bigger than me.
Because I do all the time.
He's here. And he's in person. But I already had two people coming up looking to whack you, Nate. So
uh-oh.
It's a whole different deal.
I'm usually looking to whack myself.
We call those Grunnyisms. So yeah. We'll call them McDuffieism.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Who's the defensive end from Purdue, first round?
Karlaftis.
Hey!
Look at my guy.
Yeah.
Look at my guy.
I had to work on it. I worked on it all weekend.
So tell me, you're out here, and yes, you're ready to roll for a wonderful event. We already talked to Neil Smith. The Third and Long Foundation Celebrity Golf Classic. And this is really continuing the legacy of one of your beloved teammates, Derry Thomas. And still, he talks about all the, it's unbelievable to think how long DT's been gone. And I know that you get emotional thinking about it. But, man, what a great opportunity to continue the work he did and get out here and, like you said, see a bunch of your former teammates that are supporting the cause still.
Yeah, first of all, I want to thank my wife, Sarah, for putting up with me the last couple weeks trying to get this thing organized. And then this morning, she's like, what's wrong with you?
That was not a pleasant look that she just gave you right now.
No, there's not a lot of pleasantry out of her to me today. But but I will say this. There is a lot of emotions that run every time we do this Third and Long golf tournament or anything for Third and Long. And I mentioned it in my book a little bit about the relationship that Derek Thomas and I had. Here's a guy. First of all, we had the same agent. So when I came in, he kind of took me under his wing as much as a guy who plays defense from Miami would take a guy who played offensive line from Chicago would do. But we just became fast friends. And many times at the Levy and many times at his show, we'd be on together. And when he passed away, it was like losing a brother. And I played in this golf tournament now. Gosh, it's been going on, I don't know, 20 years or so. I played in it just about every year. Sometimes it coincided with ALS, so it was kind of tough to do it. But this year it didn't. But I will say this, that it is so great to be able to honor Derek Thomas, to keep people focused on what Derek Thomas did in his life for people here in Kansas City. It's always a great tournament. It's always a great turnout. The weather's going to be great today. We've taken it to the next level. We have a bunch of different holes that we have, like, games on. Like, on my hole, the first hole, which Tomstown Distillery is going to be the sponsor. A little snapping. If you snap the ball into the target, do you get a free drink, a bottle or something? And then, of course, on the Neil Smith hole, I believe it is, it's Papa John's Pizza. You chip it into a pizza box, and you get a pizza.
How about if you do a radio show out here, can I get a pizza?
Is that
a possibility?
And then, of course, CBD American Shaman is sponsoring one of the holes. So Christian, Neil, Derek, and I all have our own hole. We made up our own games. And we're trying to bring this to the next level. So next year, if you guys want to play in a golf tournament, that is a lot of fun, and we've made par as your partner. We've realized over the years, and you've been at this many times, it's been 5.5, 6 hour rounds. We are dead set on making this a 5 hour round today. And so five-hour round, great auction items, great
lucky.
People. We're doing it. That's my point of emphasis today. And as a coach, it's about all about preparation. Because remember, prep the six Ps, proper preparation prevents piss-poor performance.
Wow.
Remember that.
Why don't they have Hungry Man Pot Pie at Christian Okoye's hole? That's,
you chip it into the pot pie.
Yeah, Swanson
right.
Hungry Man Pot Pies.
Chunky. Yes.
Delicious.
And TV
also,
dinners.
I just saw J.C. Pearson walk by. I just saw former great Chiefs defensive back Sandy Cohen is over here.
Undersized, but plays bigger.
A lot of people are trying to rub elbows with him. And so do you Christian? Is Christian here?
Will be here. Yep. He better be here. He's got all the golf balls. So he better be here. Tim Barnett just walked in. Ted McKnight. And like we talked about, Mike Davidson and that whole crew is here.
Bob Moore was here.
You're not supposed to say that out loud because
why?
He's surprising somebody.
Surprising
but it's
who?
Probably too late.
Yeah, I'll be happy
somebody
to
listen,
do that.
Everybody listens to the show. So, I mean, odds
George
are
Brett listens.
Listen to this right here. Play that from Bob Moore.
Yeah, I'll be happy to do that in a private meeting with you.
See? Who's he surprising? Tell me.
They're
all here now. They
I'm
can't.
Not sure. I just
they surprising
just
you? Him.
I will say this, that Lebo.
Surprised me. I was surprised to see him. How about that?
Lebo and I wish Lebo was here because then we could sit here and talk.
Thanks.
And then Bob Moore could come up and say, hey, you need to leave.
All right.
That would have been great.
No, I've had plenty of that.
Yeah.
I've had a couple of times. He was a caller. Now he's doing a show.
I witnessed that conversation. That was at Bo's and mine. And so.
Well, I witnessed a couple of things at Bo's and mine that we're not going to talk about. Did you ever witness anything there, too?
Oh, yes. A certain wide receiver got another name at that place when I was there.
Brock Middlebrook, a.k.a. Andre Rison. Did you ever see anyone go through the plate glass window there?
And that was my fault.
The window or
no,
the?
No.
What was your fault?
You gave him that name?
We were pretty overserved. It was a day off, and we thought it'd be funny because the lights kept going off to smash bottles on the ground when the light went out, and then they would come out and we'd act like nothing happened, and the bartender's like, "What was that?" And then he basically they called the police on us,
right?
And I left just before the police came. And it was basically my fault that the police were called, and Brock Middlebrook was the one who took it off.
Who else?
Brock probably should have just said, sorry, officer, we're going to leave.
Who else?
He should have just said it was Tim Grunhardt. He went that
all
way.
All I'm going to say is that Andre and I were there. I will not give any more names.
Why did you start that and then leave them?
You got him in all that trouble.
Because I've always been a good ghost back in the day when I drank. I always knew when it was time to leave. You know, you guys have friends that are ghosts, right? All of a sudden, they're gone.
Something.
They're like, where did he go?
As soon as I get somewhere, it's time for me to leave.
Dude.
I'm looking for a way to get.
Hey.
I'm looking for an
dude.
Escape.
My nickname back in the days when I drank was Casper because I would ghost you in a second.
Petro yelled at me one time. He's like,
and by the way, Sarah has a much different look on her face now.
Yeah.
Now it's like,
she's so much happier now.
Yeah.
That I'm going on 2 years without drinking.
There it is. What did you say, Nate?
Petro yelled at me one time and he said, dude, if you're going to ghost us like that, you can at least have the guts to come tell us you're just leaving. I said, that's the definition of ghosting is you don't tell anybody.
Nate, Petro yelled at you one time?
Well, no.
Petro yells at me all the time. I don't even think I'm on the show anymore.
Yeah.
I don't even know what's going on. So.
Well, and so then, for you again, I know you get a chance to see a lot of your teammates, but it's fun to catch up with all the guys in a festive atmosphere like this and from raising money for a great cause, right?
It is. It is awesome. I think I'm getting a phone call. But it's Seren Petro.
Someone just threw a tee at you right now.
It's Seren now.
Yeah, they did. They just threw a tee at you. Just hit you.
Well, why would they do that?
I don't know. You're so
what
muscular that it just bounced right off. You didn't even feel it.
What did I do?
I don't know. Someone threw that at you and started laughing, so I didn't see who it was.
Sarah's like, where is David? David Smell, if you're on your way, get here. Sarah's getting mad at you if that happens.
Let me
tell you.
You
don't want that to happen.
Sarah was mad at me.
Sarah was mad at Steven one time after a playoff
game
at Power and Light.
David, you don't want to be. I've been trying to make it up to her since, and you don't want to be that, you know.
You remember that look? She no more drinks, and then all of a sudden,
the tray of
tequila.
She just said, it was the Chiefs Patriots playoff game.
You remember this, Sarah?
Right. And back, what year was it?
It was me and Kelly and
2014.
And we were all down there, Power and Light. 2016 or 17?
I thought it was 15.
Yeah, maybe.
We've all said 5 different years now, by the way. I think it was 50. No, but then Sarah said, do not order any more drinks. We're leaving. But before she had said that, Timmy. Oh, yeah, we're on the radio. And Timmy had ordered
radio here.
A full tray of tequila shots for the whole table, right? And she had, but it was just before she said, do not order any more drinks. He goes, okay. And then here comes this waitress.
And
hey, Mr. Grunhardt, here's your full tray of tequila shots. And she looked at just, we're leaving now. He looks at me and goes, gotta go.
And then I ghosted her. I just ghosted.
No. And then he walks out, and she goes to the bathroom. She comes back.
Where's Tim?
Where's Tim at? He left. So
she's like, why are you airing these dirty laundry tales?
Yeah,
so she
right.
drank
that's
all
what
the
we
tequila,
do here,
right?
Because we're all family here in Kansas City.
We are family, aren't we? Third and Long Foundation.
Family. Hey, guys, thank you so much, everybody in Kansas City. Once again, and I got to go do a bunch of stuff.
Get out of here.
Hey, I just want to let everybody know from 810, especially 810 listeners, thank you guys so much for all you do for charitable works in Kansas City. You guys are like my family. 810, from promotions to on-air personalities to the executive staff, they just bend over. Well,
what are you getting ready to say?
Well, they bend over backwards to help you, but I just didn't want to get you in trouble, Stephen, because I know how much bending over backwards you do. All right, I'm out of here. We'll see you later.
What the hell is going on right now?
I can't believe we just found out that it was Grunny's fault that the whole Brock Middlebrook thing happened.
Thank you for Hartzell being out here. Paige is out here. Pamela's out here. Sarah is not happy. Timmy's walking off. I told you all hell was breaking loose out here. Derek Thomas, Neil Smith, Third and Long Foundation, Celebrity Golf Classic, Staley Farms in the Northland. Everyone have a great day on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The Border Patrol has been brought to you by locally owned and operated Walker Medical Linen Services. For linens, toweling, scrubs, lab coats, and patient gowns for your medical facility, visit walkermls.com.
Bye-bye.